Hello and welcome to The Entrepreneurs on Monocle Radio, the show all about inspiring people, innovative companies and fresh ideas in global business. Today's programme is all about architecture. We'll meet the founder of an award-winning firm with feet on two continents to hear how he navigates the challenges and opportunities that come with international projects.
We really want to try to cultivate a collaborative design team, and part of that's being able to cultivate the vision for creativity, but also trying to cultivate a culture within our own practice.
This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Tom Edwards. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs. David Montalba is a Californian-Swiss architect and the founding principal of Montalba Architects, an international multidisciplinary firm with offices in Los Angeles and Lausanne. Since its launch in December 2004, David and his team of architects, designers, and specialised professionals have crafted award-winning projects around the world, from rural landscapes in Wyoming, Florida, and Switzerland, to diverse urban environments, New York City, Los Angeles, and beyond. With well-established relationships in the hospitality, residential, and retail space, Montalba Architects infuse California cool modernism into a wide variety of projects across restaurants, commercial properties, and luxury fashion brands. Standout projects include The Rose first flagship store in LA and Carolina Herrera's Beverly Hills showroom. Listeners to this program might be familiar with some of their work, including the Tom Bradley International Terminal, LAX, Equinox Vancouver, and multiple Nobu locations. I caught up with David to talk about his early experiences working with renowned architects, the importance of collaboration in design, and balancing the challenges of contextual considerations with conceptual visions. I began by asking David about the upcoming 20th anniversary of the practice. David, look, a warm welcome. It's great to chat to you for Monocle. I'm a big admirer of the work that you've done. Well, I was going to ask, actually, is Montalba Architects, is it actually officially 20 yet? It's obviously this year. When was the actual birthday?
Yeah, the birthday is actually coming up. So it's December 1st. So
we got a while
around the corner. Yeah, okay. We've got a little bit of time. Well, I'm still a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's my opening question then, and it's a bit of a trite and obvious one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Take me back then to December 1, 2004, and imagine if just for a flash of a second you could look at where you are now. Would David from then, what would he make of what he was looking at?
I think I'd be very appreciative of all the opportunities that we've had from our clients. And also, I think a lot of what we do as creatives and as designers is about turning something that might not always have the best chance of being a creative special project into that creative special project. And a little bit of that might be sort of willing it, and then a little bit of that might be good fortune and the right partnerships and the right creative collaborations. But I think I would look back or look forward, I should say, and feel very appreciative and excited about what's ahead, because I think we're just at a place in the more recent past today that I think we're getting better and better opportunities, and great work often starts with great clients that give those opportunities.
Well, I definitely want to ask you more about the nature of that collaboration, because it strikes me really profoundly that that is something that, well, I think a lot of practices actually talk a good game about it, but maybe some of them aren't quite so demonstrative actually in the doing. Let me just ask you another question. You very generously paid a compliment before we started taping to Monocle. I want to pay you a compliment, David, in return. I think that the work that your practice does, the projects that you have delivered are, I don't know how to say it, they're definitively global, but unmistakably coming out of Santa Monica. Well, that's my question. Do you take that as a compliment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's very true to our roots. And I think it reminds me what inspires me. And, you know, I've been fortunate to have been exposed to a lot of great architecture and design around the globe. So I think it's a very much appreciated and a great compliment.
Well, just before we jump into some more specifics then, again, if we go back to 2004, you'd obviously worked and had the privilege of working with some incredible names, obviously with great Frank Gehry, for example. Tell me a bit about how you intended to use those formative experiences in your career as you set out to do your own thing. Was it about, you know, as you might do, take the best of the best you've met? Did you have to be quite rigorous and disciplined about ensuring that It wasn't a sort of a tribute act. You clearly had a very distinct vision for yourself. Tell me a bit about how you were planning on incorporating those experiences.
Yeah, sure. I think as one might look back on something like that, I think it was more about being an open sponge and really collecting modus operandi from great designers around me. And Frank was certainly one of those. Larry Scarpa was another one of those. And a lot of other great architects, a lot of whom were here in California, but some others, Todd Williams and Billy Chen in New York, who I was fortunate enough to have as sort of studio advisors. And just really just being an open-minded creative that really doesn't have an agenda to calculate and add these skills, but just to sort of let them saturate within my creative practice. And ultimately, I think it's about collecting these tools and sort of ways of seeing of these other great designers that really helped me see the world differently. And I certainly have more appreciation for that than I do looking at it as a collecting kits for my toolbox to start my practice. So I didn't look at it as I wanted to gain these skill sets so I could open a practice. I just looked at it as trying to learn and absorb as much as I could from these amazing people in different situations, whether it was working with them or having a friendly relationship with them because I knew somebody that knew them, or one of them being my neighbor. And so I think it's just about having an open mind and doing the best you can do. And slowly over time, those things certainly add up. And for me, it was a little bit more rapid because I started my practice at the age of 32, in fact, in 2004. So, you know, that's not common. And I always say that was way too young, but it happened sort of organically.
Why was it way too young? I mean, clearly it's a huge responsibility, but it's been so successful. So I guess an observer from without might say, it all worked out fine, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're in it, it's a bit more organic, but I think it, you know, architecture and design is such a long practice. And I think it takes so much time to sort of gather all the skill sets that one might need. And frankly, even myself and most people, it's hard to have all the skill sets you need at any point. So yeah, I feel like in hindsight, it was certainly rather young, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I would discourage or encourage people. I think everyone is in a different situation. And one of the things we're faced with often is that we really want to try to cultivate a collaborative design team. And part of that's inspiring people to realize that they can do great work within our practice and they don't have to pick up skill sets and leave. It's also about collaborating with a team and being able to exercise your creative practice within a larger office. And so I think I have to balance both of those, both trying to cultivate the vision for creativity, but also trying to cultivate a culture within our own practice.
Well, let's talk about collaboration then, because we've already mentioned it a couple of times, and it so obviously provides, if you'll forgive a clunky architectural metaphor, the underpinnings for all of this great work that you do. But again, yeah. I don't think all architects are necessarily collaborative by nature, and they're certainly not by practice. So how do you ensure that that process works? Because I guess some people might say, well, you know, if you're too collaborative, then you can lose focus or you can have too many cooks or whatever it might be. What's this? Is there a secret? How does it work?
Well, I mean, I think we're fortunate. If you think of what clients do with us, you know, they're collaborating with us and that they are trusting us. And I think for me, I think different people in our practice collaborate differently on the projects with me and with us as a group. And, you know, sometimes that's in much more of a design role in an early phase of a project. And sometimes that's more of a project delivery role. And so I think there's a lot of different moments and types of collaborations within a creative practice. The difference for us, if you look at, I always think to some of the other creative practitioners I admire, and one of them happens to be Sterling Ruby, who's also based here in Los Angeles. And unlike creating a piece of artwork, for us, it's actually trying to find the program, put things together and so forth, and then create that work. But then it's actually about delivering that work. And so I think it involves so many people. And I think that's probably one of the biggest differences between art and architecture is that we really have to then deliver a project. And that's, in today's modern world, a very complex piece, and it needs a lot of people. There's certainly a lot of opportunity for collaboration, both in our office and I think in just the practice of architecture today.
No, for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit maybe about projects then, because again, you know, browsing through your work, I mentioned I'm an admirer of so many. There's a tricky balance to strike that I think is, well, it looks effortless. I'm sure it takes a great deal of hard work, but it's this idea of having something that has cleanness and easy elegance, but always a warmth, a clear sense of place that I think often is sometimes missing in work that is very clean. Sometimes it can become a little clinical almost. Are those values or qualities that are sometimes in maybe opposition a little bit in a project, or actually do you think they all sit comfortably next to each other?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think having worked with different clients and being in the position we're in today, I think part of what we do is to bring moments of sort of quietness to projects. And I think designers sometimes feel they need to bring that, everything they bring is energy. And I think for us, it's also about bringing moments of silence to projects. And so I think sometimes it's hard to convince clients that silence is okay, because I think they look at it a little bit like a big canvas and we need to cover every square inch of that canvas. And I think leaving space in creative projects is a really important part of the process for us.
Well, that's super interesting. It reminds me of a conversation I often have with our creative director here at Monocle, who always reminds me to consider his skill at dealing with the white spaces on the page. But what's not happening is definitely as important as what happens. Do you think that you can communicate that to clients now, David, in a way that's easier for you, because you've got a couple of decades under your belt. Well, how did it work at the beginning when they were maybe more skeptical and you didn't at that stage yet have this great body of work?
I think in the beginning it was much more driven by trust, and I think now we're fortunate to be able to point to projects that we've done to really show them how value has been created, sometimes by what we would call addition by subtraction. For example, we have a lot of projects that we've done where sometimes the best part of the building is a portion of the building we're removing, or portion of the program we're subtracting. And I think creating space is an important part of the creative process and an important part of creating moments of, I don't want to call them solitude, but sort of aspirational moments within design and architecture that help create moments of pause and really contemplative spaces that I think we've become known for and I think certainly are inspired by.
I was chatting with a colleague, I won't mention their name, recently, Dave. They were talking about the challenge with clients who are picking problems or finding things to bring to their architect's attention during the build. And this constant need to say, listen, this is a place for living and being and experiencing. So it's not really kind of finished, in inverted commas, until you're in there. And it struck me that probably is a narrative familiar to most practitioners. I guess that crops up from time to time for you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, as you can imagine, I think the creative process is something that, whether it's our clients or our partners, they don't always see the same thing we do. And ultimately, there's moments where we have to stand tall and say, trust us and let it get a little further before we jump to conclusions. And I think, as you mentioned, I think for us, as our practice has grown and we've got a larger body of work, I think we're able to gain those clients and collaborators' trust in a way that allows us to better curate and guide them through that process.
Now, that's interesting. And you mentioned trust a moment ago, and I was going to ask at that stage, does part of you miss at that earlier stage, in your early 30s, you've struck out, you've taken a big risk, you've taken a chance. So much of it was more by gut, right? And having to just get your clients to trust you. Did you sometimes miss some of the creative and almost existential jeopardy that was involved with that, David? Or actually, you're on a bit more of an even keel probably from day to day now?
Well, I think the scale and the magnitude of the opportunities are just that much bigger. So, you know, I still feel like I'm 32 creatively, in terms of every opportunity is a very important opportunity. The impact of those opportunities is much greater. And so I think, you know, as you know, probably as you get older, lots of things and yet every change, yet everything sort of stays very similar. And I think that's unique to sort of the creative DNA within us that for most of us has been accumulating since we were kids. And, you know, I actually reflect also to my childhood. I was fortunate to have a neighbor growing up who was a really renowned architect in Northern California, George Percoffalo, who was sort of a regionalist from Carmel, Big Sur area, doing really amazing work. And I think those things rub off in your process and your vision and your view on the world, and they don't go away. And so I think that's certainly been hugely helpful throughout my career.
Now, I always sort of get a bit nervous asking people who do what you do, David, this question, because I'm well used to the usual answer. But is there a project, I don't know, over these 2 decades that you can point to that just crystallize so many of those ambitions you talked about and embody so many of the values that are important to you and your colleagues? I know it's a bit like asking people to choose their favorite children, but is there one that really just kind of is that perfect representation of what you're all about?
Yeah, I think it's interesting you say that. I think having 2 children and knowing how delicate that balance can be, I think this is actually a much easier question than asking about the children. So thank you for doing that and not asking about the children. But yeah, I think there's for sure The Row, which is a project we did here in Los Angeles, stands out. I think for a number of reasons. One, we have design values that I've cultivated in the practice that are really specific strategies and ideas that we've developed over the past 20 years. And they were rather solid, I think, within the first couple of years of the practice. But the quality of light in The Row here in Los Angeles, I think, is really remarkable. And I think is probably, if I had to pick one project and the quality of light, I would probably say that.
Well, I'm impressed by the definitive way you were able
Yeah.
to answer that one, David. And it's interesting because I guess, as you say, it really is, that's kind of a big slice of California modernism right there. And I was going to ask, because, again, just before speaking, I was browsing around, and something that struck me on your website, actually, that was interesting, was this idea of delivering projects that are contextual yet conceptual. Just tell me about that. What do you understand by that? Because it's an elegant play on words, which I like as a journalist, but actually that's the root, right, of California modernism. It kind of that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think it's for us as architects. I mean, my personal view on this is I've always admired architects that were extremely thoughtful to the place that they were creating and crafting their work. And really, it was a response to conditions around it. And I think, as hard as it may be in life for many of us to always be good listeners, it's really, when we're making works that have the longevity that our works have in the world, it's really critical that we're good listeners and we're really considered in the sort of moves that we make. And so I think really understanding the context you're in and considering that when you're making and crafting a building or a space that's going to impact so many people on a day-to-day basis, I think is critical. And at the same time, I think you want to craft work that's not diluted and that has vision and character and strength and gives people that emotion that I think we all crave in the environments that we spend our time in. So it's great to hear you appreciate that too. I think it's a really important part of our work and sort of our view on both the practice and the world.
Well, no, I love that, and I like the fact that you said the word emotional again. I think, we're human beings. These buildings are, they're not just sort of machines with purpose. There's a human enterprise at the heart of all this. And I just wanted to dig a little deeper into that idea of contextuality, because the parameters within which great creatives are asked or tasked explicitly or implicitly to recognize or reflect cultural, historical context in the projects they do, whether that's in visual arts or architecture design, whatever it might be. It feels to me like even in the last 5 or 10 years, David, that's getting more difficult to do that in a way where you're not then laid open to charges of pastiche or of appropriation. Do you feel that is a delicate balance, or do you think because you've been very clear and focused in your approach that actually you are able to do that and it's not subject to those vicissitudes?
Well, I think globalism has an impact on that, to be candid. I think that the world, as you know, has changed so much in terms of what we all see and how quickly we see it over the past 20, 30 years, that I think there's sometimes this fluidity with which people think that this can happen there and it doesn't matter where you are. But I think those people that are grounded, I think, in a place and sort of listen to that place, I think certainly will sort of uncover the sort of elements that truly ground those ideas and places together. And so I don't know. I think it's a really special opportunity in the world we live in where, you can go to a store in one part of the world and in a store in the other part of the world, and they're so similar, and there's this sort of assimilation of experiences. To uniquely contrast that with pushing experiences to be uniquely different and contextual to the place that they're in, yet maybe have a spirit or an energy that is special in a certain part of the world. And it's interesting, we're doing a really amazing lake house right now in Switzerland. And a lot of our oceanfront properties that we've done or homes that we've done happen to be in California. And there's certain ideas that we're pulling into this new project, but you cannot replicate the quality of the light in California. That's uniquely California. So it affects the materiality that we're thinking about in this other project. And so again, I think there's a lot of different levels of contextualism, whether it's the built environment or the quality of natural light and the environmental situation. And I think all those need to be sort of carefully considered in the work that we do.
For sure. Let me ask you a couple of quick fire questions,
Sure.
David. You're a deeply thoughtful man, but tell me, where do you head? Is it a place if you just need a moment of that kind of calm reflection, that thoughtfulness you've described? Are you a kind of a hiker, a biker? It's if you've got a youngish family, believe you me, I'm speaking from experience. Not the most relaxing thing to be engaged with. So,
I don't know. I don't know.
oh,
My
is that what it looks like?
the most relaxing thing for me is to watch my son play tennis or watch my daughter paint. I think there's something really impactful in seeing the next generation doing their thing creatively, whatever that may be, whether in my son's case it's playing tennis, or my daughter's case she's just studying fine art and painting. And I think that's an amazing calming thing for me personally. But also being here in LA, honestly, taking a drive is always amazing. And that's the case for me in Switzerland or LA, is just taking a drive in the landscape and really having that moment to sort of unwind and sort of aspire to future things ahead.
Yeah, and what about just kind of dreaming a little? Do you think we have to always make sure we retain some capacity for, even if it's a completely vainglorious and unrealistic ambition, but letting ourselves take those ideas for a wander in that way? That must be important, right?
Absolutely. I think you touched on it earlier, but I think the environment that we're in has a big part of that. And so for us, our studio and crafting the right environment in our studio is such a big part of how we tailor our creative practice and sort of the work that we do. And, creating moments of solitude in a very busy practice are actually quite tough. And so I think having the space to do that is really valuable. Travel, we haven't talked about travel, but I mean, for me and having an international practice in Lausanne and also the office in LA, which is our primary office, and just the travel in between, I think that does sort of carve out moments of solitude and sort of perspective and reflectivity that help the work that we do and help us be in the right mindset to do the work that we do.
Okay, next quick fire round question. What are you most excited about, David? We mentioned you've got this precocious teenager that's about to become a maybe slightly more serious 20 something towards the end of the year, but I'm sure you're focused on that, and you'll be marking the occasion with a few, champagne corks popping and all the rest of it. But is that what you're most excited about? You've mentioned a couple of specific projects. More general trends, what gets you kind of leaping out of bed in the morning, if anything does?
I think we're doing some amazing projects right now, two of which are here in LA. One is the Anderson Towers, which is the sort of transformation of two high rises in Century City, and in each of those, I think there's a strong connectivity with the landscape. And I think I'm inspired and excited about bringing the right craftspeople into the work that we do and the right artists. And one of those projects, we brought an artist from your neck of the woods, from England, Alison Crowther, who's a sculptor, to sort of carve this really amazing, like 20-foot long desk out of a 400-year-old fallen tree that had fallen in the English countryside. And she's an artist I've admired for years. I first was introduced to in Hong Kong about 12 years ago. And I think this sort of collaboration with artists for us is really something we appreciate. And in a world where artisan craftsmanship and those kinds of things are harder and harder to sort of uncover and sort of fold into projects. I think that's really an important part of both our work and what we're excited about in the future and sort of folding into different projects.
It's Alison Crowther. She makes those big like oak cones,
yes,
and eggs, and
yeah,
is that, oh yeah,
yeah,
they're incredible,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And you know, I think for us, you know, we feel like the projects we do need to be inclusive of others. And I think whether it's that or a new artist studio we're doing for a pretty renowned artist, I think, or a great, amazing landscape architect. We finished a project in Palo Alto, Nobu Palo Alto, which is a really terrific hotel in the downtown historic core of Palo Alto. And the client commissioned this amazing landscape architect from Japan to work with us on this garden restaurant. And, you know, there's these amazing rocks that are, you know, probably hundreds and thousands of years old that are in the project. And I think uncovering sort of craft and history and culture in these contemporary projects is a really important part of giving them both depth and greater purpose and hopefully impact.
That was David Montalba, the founding principal of Montalba Architects. And you can learn more about the business and the plans that David and his colleagues have up their sleeves by heading to montalbaarchitects.com. And that's all for this episode of The Entrepreneurs. We'll be back at the same time next week. The programme was produced by Laura Kramer, with mixing and editing by Tamsin Howard. Listen again and find out more about the show at monocle.com. You can also follow us and catch up with the archive via your preferred podcast platform. If you'd like to get in touch with the team, email Laura on lrk@monocle.com. I'm Tom Edwards. Goodbye, and thanks for listening to The Entrepreneurs.